Radio with Brannon House.
All right, welcome. Glad you are with us. We're going to not have our Middle East update today because there really wasn't much that Dr. Woods had that was new. And so he was also, I think, at a conference all week. So he didn't have much time to prepare. What I do want to do, though, is go back to the little bit of the audio left with Mark Musser on Nazi ecology. Then I want to take you back to this document put out by this business organization that is openly stating they are working with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. These are big organizations. Some of them, as we saw yesterday, have a history. The names of their companies are companies we notice had a history working with the Nazi regime, the Third Reich. And as Mark Musser explained to us yesterday, and as we're about to finish seeing in this clip today coming from my documentary, Siege, this is nothing new. This sustainable development green agenda is not new. It's eugenics, population control. It is who they want to have breeding, who they want to have having children. This is not new at all. And so I want to continue this, and then I'm going to prove to you again that part of the goal here is eugenics. But again, we haven't seemed to learn from history some in our country and the world. Here's the remaining few minutes with my interview from Siege with Mark Musser on Nazi ecology. Then we'll go to the PowerPoint, and I'll explain to the radio audience what this document says as these world global companies are working with big business working with big government and the UN to enslave us. Listen to this with Mark Musser.
Criticize the Jews for practicing these kosher slaughter practices. So they, Nazi Germany outlawed that practice in 1933. So that was one of the first, they'd taken away the Jewish food supply, basically.
So in 1933, they put in an animal rights law.
Mm-hmm. Yep. First of all,
it was really targeting the Jews.
Almost the first order of business was a anti-Semitic animal rights law passed in 1933. Hitler was an animal lover, animal rights guy, so was Hess, of course, was too. So Himmler was too, and both Hitler and Himmler didn't like hunting. They thought it was evil.
So they go after the Jews over animal rights. Then the next thing you know, they're going after the Jews over the timber trade.
Well, they had all these. It's just like all the stuff being piled on us. It's the same thing. So, yeah, there's quotations. We have records where German Nazis were complaining about the Jews and the timber trade and cutting down the last of the beech trees and, you know, the walnut trees and, you know, this kind of stuff. You know, it was typical.
But of course, again, as businessmen that were maybe involved in the timber trade,
right,
they were also working in a free market capitalist system. So going after them helped destroy the capitalist free market system, as well as it didn't fit in with the German green worship of nature mentality.
Yeah.
So they could go after the Jews in their timber trade and take out not only their capitalism, but then the Germans could use that to promote their environmentalism.
Yes, no, of course.
And that's what's happening today, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're using environmentalism to take out capitalists and Christians who by very nature of a Judeo-Christian worldview, are into free market principles. Let me give you this quote. Quote, yeah. We owe the animals not mercy but justice, and the debt often remains unpaid in Europe, the continent that is permeated with Jews. It is obviously high time in Europe that Jewish values on nature should be expelled from Europe.
Get rid of them. Yep. So this is the, this man here is the father of what we call environmental ethics. Super anti-Semite.
He said,
and
quote,
this is Hitler's favorite philosopher.
He said, quote, the fault lines with the Jewish view that regard the animal as something manufactured for man's use.
Yep.
He went on to say, quote, these are the effects of Genesis 1 and generally the whole Jewish way of looking at nature.
Yeah. It's amazing. These are amazing quotes. And he believed it, and Hitler loved this guy.
What we're really headed toward is Agenda 21, now called Agenda 2030, radical environmentalism, the end of our private property, the persecution of Christian and Jews, international socialism. We've seen this before. It was really what was going on with the Nazi Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. Very similar.
It's just being repackaged.
It's just repackaged, and it maybe even be worse before it's all said and done. Yeah, because it's getting to be so developed now. Things are getting...
Well, and we're going to get into that. I mean, they use trains, and they use the gas chamber to get rid of the people that were the source of all suffering and oppression and the blight, the Jews.
This bacteria.
Yeah, the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
This time they're going to use, I believe, they won't have to use concentration camps per se. I think what they'll use is a regime of a universal health care.
and they'll just euthanize you by depriving you of health care.
It's looking dangerous.
It is.
We're living dangerous, serious times.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll get into that and more in our next broadcast. Today, the globalists seek world domination. And once again, the capitalist and those that reject the idea that man is to serve nature must be dealt with one way or the other. Sustainable development and radical environmentalism sees man as a blight on the environment. Ironically, they see themselves as gods. But the little people are a blight. Thus, they seek to take away private property from its rightful owners in order to create biospheres and parks or planned communities. The globalists see abortion on demand and euthanasia for population control. Universal health care or socialized medicine must become a reality globally so that the almighty state can determine who is valuable human resource to be preserved through medical care, while those deemed to be the opposition to the global paradigm are quietly and neatly exterminated through the rationing of health care. Sustainable development masks all manner of tyranny, oppression, murder, socialism, and global governance. David Brower, the first executive director of the radical environmentalist organization, the Sierra Club, declared, quote, "Childbearing should be a punishable crime against society unless the parents hold a government license. All potential parents should be required to use contraceptive chemicals, the government issuing antidotes to citizens chosen for childbearing," end quote. Notice, the government will decide who has children. This is very similar to the eugenics of Hitler. In 1977, Paul Eldridge and his wife wrote the book Echo Science with John Holdren. In 2009, Holdren became President Obama's so-called science czar. Mr. and Mrs. Eldridge and John Holdren wrote, quote, "It has been concluded that compulsory population control laws, even including laws requiring compulsory abortion, could be sustained under the existing Constitution if the population crisis becomes sufficiently severe to endanger society. If some individuals contribute to general social deterioration by overproducing children, and if the need is compelling, they can be required by law to exercise reproductive responsibility," end quote. And of course, by reproductive responsibility, they mean abortion on demand, just like communist China. Sustainable development includes provisions for a world authority that controls all resources and every aspect of human life, whether they are allowed to be born, how and when they die, and the way they're educated. This system is well underway through the United Nations and Agenda 2030 as they continue their siege on God-given rights. Many Americans do not want to repeat the mistakes of past nations that have been ruled by socialist, communist, or fascist dictators. Nor do they want to implement here in America the philosophies of communist China or the former Soviet Union. However, unless Americans educate themselves to the deceptive propaganda and masking terms now advancing Agenda 2030, sustainable development, and globalism, their children and children's children will be left asking, how did this happen? Thank you for watching part 3 of Siege, the docu-movie.
And we'll hold it right there. Now, so that gives you an idea that what this really is the same old, it's just been repackaged and made a little cleaner, if you will, right? And this brings us back to the fact that we are dealing with companies, as we showed you in the screen yesterday, that are behind this project, the project member companies, and it lists all of them, some of them, again, whose names we went through, Bayer, BASF, and others, that had a past in Nazi Germany. Not according to me, but according to what we looked up and cited and read from Wikipedia, from the History Channel website, IG Farben, Bayer, BASF. So the document we're going through is a document. Let me go back to the letter here by the president of this company or this organization, Peter Baker. It's called World Business Council for Sustainable Development. I just stumbled on it the other day in my research. World Business Council for Sustainable Development. So I started reading their website, and then I found this PDF. I want to continue going through this PDF a little bit for you, because notice again, it says that this is the new mind shift. We have to have a mindset shift, and we're going to reinvent capitalism. Of course, what they're doing is changing it now, as I said yesterday, from shareholder capitalism, people who actually have an investment, they take their capital, they put it at risk, and they invest it in something. That would be a shareholder, right? Now it's a stakeholder. We're all stakeholders, they say. So now we're going to go to this new way of capitalism. And we talked about that. I won't go over that same information today. Well, here we see, by 2050, we envision a society in which, and here's what they talk about. This is pure UN, global governance. We envision all human rights, including civil, cultural, economic, political, and social rights, as laid out in the UN Declaration of Human Rights. There you go. They're acknowledging these businesses, and these are major corporations. We showed you the list for TV. we've talked about who some of the names are. You saw 3M on there. You saw Bayer, BASF. You saw Toyota, that are reported to be part of the, you know, companies that are behind this. And they're telling you right now, we're uniting up with the goals of the UN Declaration on Human Rights. And its accompanying covenants and conventions are fully recognized and embedded in societies globally. The UN guiding principles on business and human rights are upheld. That's what they want by 2050. So they want the UN principles for business, folks. What do you think that's going to be? I can tell you right now what it is. What you find in sustainable development. That's going to be ESG. And this document talks an awful lot about ESG. What is ESG? ESG is environmental, social, and governance. So you got environmental wackoism, environmental law, green agenda, environmental, social, that's social justice, that's redistribution of wealth, using environment as the cause, climate change and environment as the cause. Why do we have to redistribute wealth? So that we don't all die from the environmental crisis of global warming, climate change, whatever they want to call it. Environmental, social, and then G is governance. The governance is global governance. You got to agree to go along with the UN agenda, the UN guiding principles, the UN Declaration of Human Rights. Now, if your corporation does not have a good ESG score, then your company is not going to be able to do business. Your local business, you're like, oh, Brandon, come on. All right, let me just tell you then. Any of you out there that ever pour concrete or do electrical or plumbing or brick mason work or anything for any local, state, or federal government, if your local community builds a government building and you're a contractor that paves the roads or does any work, trust me, when this is implemented as they want it, your company will be evaluated as to whether you're complying with the ESG scores, which means they're going to want to see that you're all up to date on all of your carbon footprint, offsetting it, buying the right carbon taxes. So if you can get through the good old boy club of who gets the contract, has your company complied with all this? This will impact you. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com. I'm showing you a document where big business is openly admitting they're going to help the UN, push the UN agenda, sustainable development, and this will become the new way of doing business. It's a reinventing of capitalism. Why is this important? Because as we've been, well, there's many reasons, but one of the things we've been telling you is much of what's coming, the businesses will be promoting. Just like we saw in COVID, you can't go into a restaurant. You can't go into a major, you know, retail store unless you have your mask on. Soon it'll be you have to show your digital passport and all these kind of things, right? And who did business get to implement this? If businesses, major businesses that you shop at said, we're not going to do that, well, the government, you know, would be spitting in the wind pretty much, right? But if business is on board, now all of a sudden, it's not the government forcing you to do it. It's your local grocery store. It's a local restaurant. You see how this works? So it's important because you need to understand is what we're going to is a corporate fascist model. Big business, big government in cahoots together. Now, they've openly said they're going to reinvent capitalism. This includes ESG scores, which is the basically the social credit scores for companies. Now, you and I as individuals will have social credit scores. Our social credit scores are going to impact a lot of things. Our social credit scores are going to determine a loan. Do you get a loan at the bank? Now, you doubt me. I have showed the screenshot from the World Economic Forum many times where their own interactive wheel says that you will go to the bank with your social credit score, your digital ID, and your loans will be based on that. Your ability to get an airline ticket, your ability to vote, your ability to get online. If you have a bad social credit score, are you going to be approved for a social media platform? If you have a bad social credit score or your company has a bad ESG score, is your company going to get approved for an online payment system so you can conduct commerce online? You see how the ESG for the corporation and the social credit score for the individual can use to control our life? I mean, you add that with digital money and the tracking of what we buy, what we can buy, what we can't buy, whether we can travel, whether our digital currency will work outside our 15-minute city, which is based on walking and biking. Pretty soon, they say, you know what, House, we don't want you to travel. We're not going to throw you in jail, but you better not go outside this 15-minute radius, or then we could throw you in jail. And we're going to determine what it is you can buy and what you can do. Because your social credit score is so low, you've been confined to this 15-minute radius for the next 12 months. You have to live within this 15-minute radius for the next 12 months. Get outside of it, and we won't be so nice. Then we're going to send you off to a camp. But oh, by the way, we've just deducted from your account a punitive fine. So we're not going to throw you in jail. We're going to fine you. We already took the money out of your account digitally. And we're not going to allow you to have anything that works digitally for money outside this 15-minute radius. And we're going to know if you went outside this 15-minute radius. Oh, and by the way, we don't want you hanging out with any other, quote, domestic terrorist. So you better mind your P's and Q's in regards to who you get together with. You mean all of a sudden they don't want me going to church? I mean, they could control every aspect of your life, folks. And for those who want to mock this, then they don't understand history that we just looked at with Mark Musser yesterday and today. But this document says big business is going to hope by 2050, we'll be having guidelines from the UN. UN guidelines, look at this, guys. UN guiding principles on business and human rights are upheld with all states and businesses fully fulfilling their all states and businesses fully fulfilling their respective duties and responsibilities to protect and respect human rights and to provide access to effective remedy. Now, by human rights, what they mean is you got to accept the LGBTQ+. You got to not just respect it. You got to value it. You got to approve of it. Now, we just had the passage of the Respect Marriage Act, right? And all the traitorous Republicans that went along with that. Oh, yeah. They're continuing with their agenda, folks. which means a guy shows up with a great resume and a suit. You hire him. You're a small business. The next day, after he's gotten the job, shows up as a woman dressed in a dress. Sorry. Can't do anything about it. Federal law. Business models and strategies are developed with attention to the risk they may pose to vulnerable workers, communities, and consumers, and are adapted to avoid harm. Multi-stakeholder coalitions have played a key role in helping to eradicate forced labor, modern slavery and human trafficking, eliminate child labor and sexual harassment in all workplaces. So that, you know, again, this all sounds good, but what you have to understand is this: a lot of this is coded language. A lot of this is coded language. And in sexual harassment in all workplaces. That doesn't mean some guy forcing himself onto some lady in the workforce. This means you have to approve of someone coming in as a transgendered female who's really a male. And if you don't like it and you don't agree with it and you show your disdain, that can fall under the category of sexual harassment and discrimination and bigotry. Businesses working with suppliers, trade unions, and other stakeholders to enable incentive and reward respect for workers across their value chains, including fair wages. Again, what are fair wages? Who decides fair wages? We're already going to $15 minimum wage in most markets. Just look, watch as they continue to up that number to the point where it becomes punitive for many, many businesses and they close. Or they certainly don't expand. Public-private sectors collaborate to ensure the safety of human rights defenders, blah, 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 blah. There's your public-private. There is health and happiness for all. The basic needs of all individuals are met, allowing them to live healthy, happy, and self-determined lives. No, they're not. That's a lie. It's not self-determined. It's determined by the elite. This thing is full of lies. Food is sufficient. How do you guarantee that? Food, well, I guess because you allow for cricket chips. Food made from crickets and worms and cockroach milk. So food is sufficient. Well, what do you mean by food? Synthetic meat? So by 2050, if the rights of food being sufficient, affordable, and nutritious, and the human right to water and sanitation is upheld. Well, again, these sound like great ideas, you know, but reality is what we're talking about here is now giving jurisdiction for the federalization, the centralization of natural resources. How do I know this? Because I've already shown you the document from 2020 from the Rockefeller Foundation on their, what's it called? Reset the Table. Their document called Reset the Table. And what's it about? Federalizing our food system. How do you control the people? Food. You want to control the people? Get control of the food. Now, under the guise of human rights and equality, we're going to get Americans and people across the world to agree to the federalization of the water and the food. But we did it under the guise of equality and human rights and fairness and equity. Sounds so nice, doesn't it? And reasonable. I mean, who could disagree with this? Until you realize what you're talking about, who you're talking about. The same people that wanted to give you the COVID shot they know is killing you, that they now want to give to children and are giving to children. The same people that are knowingly poisoning people, killing people, making people infertile, is the same people that now, under the guise of equality and fairness and human rights, want to nationalize your water and your food. And they literally, at the Department of Agriculture, are having policy kicked around about you having a license to have a garden in your backyard. Think I'm joking? Go look it up. There is universal access to affordable and reliable energy, and human habitats are safe and resilient. Universal access to affordable and reliable energy. What does that mean? What does that mean? Don't we have that today unless you live in an impoverished nation? And why is your nation impoverished? Usually because you have some third world dictator that's stealing all the money and oppressing the people. Or you have some pagan ideas that we don't want to kill the rats that are eating the grain so we don't have enough grain to feed the cattle, i.e. India. Got plenty of ability to feed their people. Just kill the rats. No, it might be someone's grandmother reincarnated. You think I'm joking? This is serious. The world enjoys universal access to quality education at all levels. Really. So free education. Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for that? You know, there's been a lot of controversy over Joe Biden canceling student loans. That's right. This all fits with the agenda. Who's going to pay for the free education? Those of us that work are going to be taxed into oblivion, or they're just going to print the money. Modern monetary theory, MMT, modern monetary theory. They'll just print the money, which debases the money you hold, which causes inflation, which means now that's a hidden tax. Everything you buy is costing you more. Why? Because we've expanded the money supply to pay for the expansion of government and social services. And now our money isn't worth squat. But you get free education. Well, it's not free. Someone's paying for it. Someone's paying the price for it. In fact, we will all pay the price for an expansion of the money supply to pay for the expansion of services through quantitative easing, modern monetary theory, whatever fancy name they want to give to it, inflation, expansion of the money supply. Both urban and rural communities flourish. Rural communities' access to land and livelihoods it supports is protected, and the particular rights of indigenous people are respected. Okay? Access to land. What does that mean? We're going to go green space more. We're going to have more green space, more parks. We're going to take land. 3,000 Dutch farmers losing their farms. Why? Because we need more access to land for people to walk and bike through. Everyone has access to safe and affordable mobility solutions which connect communities to each other and key to goods and services. What does that mean? Connecting communities. You're going to have a lot of walking paths and little buffer areas. And you think we, and by the way, I was talking with the lady the other day that is in charge of an organization that oversees this agenda called 30 by 30. Remember, 30% of the farmland they're going to take in America and around the world by 2030, 50% by 2050. Well, they're grabbing up these buffers of land, but then they need ways for these communities or these land tracts to connect with each other, to have access for pathways. What do? Eminent domain. Take the land. What did we just read? Everyone has access to safe and affordable mobility solutions with connect communities to each other. There's a lot of ways that could be defined. Universal access to digital and communication technologies connect individuals across geographic, cultural, and socioeconomic boundaries, thereby contributing to the development of fair, informed, prosperous, and inclusive societies. What are we talking about here? Well, just like we had the Obama phones, everybody gets a cell phone. I guess we're all going to make sure everybody gets the internet. Everybody's digitally connected. Well, of course they need everybody digitally connected. They need everybody digitally connected so they can track you. They need everybody digitally connected so they know how much hot water you're using, how much your refrigerator has in it. They need to know how much energy you're using for your carbon footprint. Of course they have to have everybody digitally connected. They're acting like being digitally connected is some kind of human right. No, they have to have everyone digitally connected so they can control you and monitor you and then punish you when you don't comply. We'll be back more with what big business and big government and the UN has in store. Welcome back. Glad you're with this Worldview Radio. Okay, look at this one. This is pure socialism. This is what I'm telling you. This is corporate fascism. another word for fascism, big government, big business merging together. Remember, the Nazis, the National Socialist Workers' Party. This is the International Socialist Workers' Agenda. This is international socialism. This is international Fourth Reich stuff. That's why I wrote the book, The Coming Religious Reich, in 2015. Reich means empire kingdom. They're creating a global empire kingdom that's based on the concepts of socialism or fascism. Hitler was a socialist. He was a fascist. Now look, the gap between rich and poor has been significantly reduced. Poverty is ended in all its forms everywhere. First of all, the way you do away with a gap between the rich and the poor is make sure you don't have anyone between the rich and the poor. There is no more rich. There is no more middle class. There's no more middle class. There's no more upper class unless you're part of the elite class. Now, if you're part of the power elite, you will still have your money. But other than that, everybody else is going to have it taken away from taxation. It'll be redistributed. Think again, as I've given you the analogy for years, the middle class is like a cow. You milk the cow. You give the cream to the elite. The elite keep the cream. That's how they have their security and their big salaries and their pensions and their, like I said, their bodyguards, everything. You milk the cow, the middle class. You keep the cream. The cream goes to the elite. Everything else goes to the underclass, distributed among them equally, keeping them fed enough to keep them in check, under control. So the only way the gap between rich and poor has been significantly reduced is you have no rich, except the elite. And then poverty is ended in all its forms everywhere? Well, that's impossible. That's a utopian society. It's impossible. Jesus said the poor will always be with you. Look at this next one. All people have access to decent and meaningful work that sustains them and their families. Well, first of all, how do you do that? How do you have somebody's work guarantee that it's going to, first of all, sustain them and their families? Some people have to work 2 and 3 jobs, okay? How many of you in this audience are working more than one job or have a family member that does? I know a guy that does. I know at least one guy for sure. He works 2 8-hour shifts every day. I know exactly which companies he works for, because I will see him at 1, and then if I go later in the evening to the other company, which is a grocery store, there he is. Wait a minute. Don't you work over there? Yeah, 8 hours over there, 8 hours over here. You work a 16-hour workday. Yeah, in the retail industry. So I go to the counter to pay at this drugstore, there he is. You go into the grocery store, and there he is as a shift leader, overseeing all the cashiers and watching what's going on. I'm like, what's the deal? He's married. He's got children. He's working 16 hours a day, 2 8-hour shifts, 2 different companies. And you're saying you're going to guarantee him meaningful work. Well, I don't think he probably considers his work all that meaningful to him. I think he considers it his obligation, and that's what he does. I don't think he's too excited about it. But he is like a lot of men that get up every day and they go to a job they maybe don't particularly care for, which is a big chunk of the workforce, whether you're blue collar or white collar. A lot of attorneys hate their job. A lot of accountants hate their job. A lot of people don't use the degree they went to school for because they turned out they didn't like that job. So how do you guarantee that everyone has a meaningful work? What does that mean? Meaningful to who? Meaningful to the state? Oh, everyone has meaningful work. Yeah, you think they mean you. Now, meaningful work could just as well mean it is meaningful to the state. The state deems it to be important, vital, necessary, meaningful work. Otherwise, you're a useless eater. Now, sustains them and their families. Well, my example I'm giving you, this young man working 2 8-hour shifts, sustains them and their families. What are you going to do? Guarantee minimum income to everybody? Look, sir, you don't have to work 2 8-hour shifts. You can work one job for 8 hours, and we're just going to up your pay. We're going to force that drugstore you work for to pay you enough to equal what you've been doing 16 hours a day. We'll force them to pay you enough hourly to make the same amount of money in 8 hours, because we're gonna federally mandate a much, much higher minimum wage. Okay, try that and watch what happens. They will automate. He won't be standing there when you go into the drugstore to pay anymore. You'll be doing a kiosk. He'll be eliminated. His work won't be necessary. But don't worry, because they'll just put him on an income, bare minimum income, and he won't have to work. And he can find meaning by doing some kind of community service they put him to. All people have access to decent and meaningful work. Then the next one. Work provides people globally with financial security, a sense of self-worth. Well, again, is that the job of the government? Is the job of the government to give you a job? Is the job of the government to make sure that you have self-worth and meaningful work? No. This is Orwellian. This is exactly the kind of stuff that you see in sci-fi movies, where they guarantee you what you do, where you go, and that you're going to be happy in your work. Or as Klaus Schwab says, or maybe you'll own nothing and be happy. Well, how are they going to guarantee that? Meaningful work, self-worth, a sense of self-worth in your work. Again, that goes back to Karl Marx 101, alienation of the worker. The worker standing there on the factory line every day, you know what? After a while, doesn't really like that job. Doesn't find a lot of self-worth in the job. But guess what? Not doing it for so much self-worth or enjoyment, doing it for this thing called a paycheck. Because that's what people do. They get up and they go to jobs they don't particularly like. Some people do that all life long, their whole career. They get up, go to a job they don't really like. But that's their responsibility, to provide for their family. You think the farmer loves getting up at the crack of dawn or before dawn in the cold of winter and feeding the livestock, milking the cows? You think they enjoy working past dark and working on the tractor and fixing the tractor? And all the farmer does for so many hours of the day, do you think there's a time he says, you know, this is really grueling? This is really tiresome. I don't sometimes enjoy this. Or the auto mechanic, and I could keep going in any occupation. At some point, regardless of how glamorous the job might look or fun or exciting, at the end of the day, after so many months or years of doing it, it's a job. But we get up and we do it because it's our calling. It's our mission. It's serving a purpose. Maybe just simply providing for our family. Others, it may be, well, I provide for my family while I offer a service to my customers. And I really like my customers. Or I really like the clients I work for. I don't always like every aspect of what I do, but I find purpose in the fact that I'm serving other people and providing a living for my family and I. But the government's job isn't to come around and make sure you're happy in your work or that you find a sense of self-worth. That's Marxism 101. The worker stands there in the factory. He gets paid a minimum wage to do this work while the plant owner makes a fortune on the worker, as though the worker's value is less than the owner's value. Now, that is the class envy. That is the hostility that Karl Marx was putting between the workers and the owners, between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. The bourgeoisie, the owners, and the proletariat, the workers. Let's create envy between the capitalist who has capital and he puts his capital at risk, but let's make him out to be the bad guy. Let's not talk about the fact that he's, you know, lived pretty slim for many years, worked a lot of long, 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 long hours doing the work himself before he could finally hire enough people, so he spends most of his day now in the office. But when he's in the office, which looks so glamorous to people standing on the factory line, he's in the office, he's crunching numbers, trying to keep everybody on the factory line employed and paying taxes and jumping through red tape of the government and form after form after form, and dealing with vendors and vendors that are late and vendors that are late in paying and collecting invoices. Oh, we make it look like the guy sitting up there in the corner office overlooking the factory plant has got it made. But the factory worker, when he leaves, he checks out, he goes home, he's done. Guess what the business guy's doing? He's working 24/7 and worrying how he's going to keep the factory afloat to keep everybody paid on the floor. And when the company goes bust, yeah, you might lose your job on the factory floor, but you'll go find another one. He's just lost everything. But they don't tell you that. Karl Marx just created envy between the worker and the owner, the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. Well, that didn't work so well here in America, where you could turn out, be born poor, and all of a sudden become very rich. Oprah Winfrey, the owner of Black Entertainment Television. These are Black Americans. But we can't do that whole class envy thing too well in America. So what we do, we made it a racial thing. Again, I don't know how that works when we have blacks succeeding in America like nowhere else. Oprah Winfrey, the owner of Black Entertainment TV, Barack Hussein Obama. I mean, we've got a person of color as vice president. We've had black members of the U.S. Supreme Court. We've had a black chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. We've had a black secretary of state twice. I mean, it doesn't work. That's because Americans don't, I guess, think about these things. That shouldn't work in America either. The same way class envy isn't supposed to work anymore because you can work hard and achieve in America the American dream, racism shouldn't work in America either for the same reason. You can look around and say, wait a minute, you have people of all people groups, immigrants coming from India, from Asia, and they end up being very wealthy within one generation. More so than the average American, by the way. Did you know that? Go look at those studies. But no one's running around talking about Asian privilege. No, they got to talk about white privilege. But that shouldn't work in America, because we can look around and say, well, everybody can come here and work hard, okay? So we'll go to the racism thing. That's what they did. That shouldn't have worked, because we should have been able to look around and say, wait a minute, there was a past, but that's not true today, because look at Condoleezza Rice, Black Secretary of State. Colin Powell, Black Secretary of State, Black Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Thurgood Marshall, Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court. Barack Obama, Black President. But it does work, because people have lost reason, logic, context. But they try to alienate people. Karl Marx did it through the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, the workers, the factory owner, the factory worker. But that was classic alienation of the worker. You need to be valued in your work. Your work on the factory floor is just as valuable as the factory owner, and it should be shown your value by you making the same thing the factory owner's making. But you didn't sacrifice what the factory owner sacrificed. You're not carrying the bank loans and the bank notes the factory owner's carrying. You haven't put in the risk. You haven't put in the capital. The great risk comes great reward. So this document goes on and on about one thing. No, look at this one. No poverty. Zero hunger. Folks, none of this stuff is going to be realized to the millennium. But what are they trying to create? Heaven on earth. Heaven on earth, a utopia. And they're building it all around ESG and many other things we've warned about. And your carbon footprint. 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347-9829. Phone line's now open. Lines. I want to play a few minutes of this. I dealt with this on TV last night and in my Worldview Report the other day. Are you guys watching this Ecto Life Now, this is not reality yet. But this is the idea. Now, this goes with exactly what we're talking about, Brave New World stuff. A while ago, we heard during the documentary Siege, you got to have a license to have a child. There could be sterilants put in the water, and those who are deemed worthy of being parents will get the antidote so they can actually have children. Well, now we've got so many people are going to be infertile from the shot, they're going to get to decide now who gets to have children. So many people be infertile from the shot, the COVID death shot. Now you get to decide who gets to have children through a artificial womb. And don't think that everybody's going to line up and go get access to this. It's going to be very expensive, so it's going to automatically be deemed who can afford it, much less who's going to be allowed to be a parent. So have you heard of the artificial womb? This is what they're planning, folks. I'm not making this up. Listen.
Introducing Ectolife, the world's first artificial womb facility, powered entirely by renewable energy. Ectolife allows infertile couple to conceive a baby and become the true biological parents of their own offspring. It's a perfect solution for women who had their uterus surgically removed due to cancer or other complications. With Ectolife, premature births and C-sections will be a thing of the past. Ectolife is designed to help countries that are suffering from severe population decline, including Japan, Bulgaria, South Korea, and many others. The facility features 75 highly equipped labs. Each state-of-the-art lab can accommodate up to 400 growth pods or artificial wombs. Every pod is designed to replicate the exact conditions that exist inside the mother's uterus. A single building can incubate up to 30,000 lab-grown babies per year.
And by the way, here's the deal, too. You can also pick a lot. So this is, again, eugenics. You can pick what you want in your child, and then you can also sign up for the elite package. You can sign up for the elite package, and you get to choose the genes and all kinds of stuff, particularly, again, when you choose the elite package. I mean, this is really happening. This is what they want to have happen. This is what they want to have happen. So, again, you think, oh, this is for everybody. No, this is for those who get chosen. All right, so let's go to the phone lines. 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347-9829. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions. We'll move through as many calls as quickly as we can. Let's go to our first caller, which is, I think, Linda. Hi, Linda. No, Joe, line one. Joe, thanks for calling in, Joe.
Hi, Mr. House. I agree that the government is very inefficient about achieving their stated goals of equality. And I'll give you a brief anecdote. So after I graduated from college with a master's degree in government and nonprofit administration, I had all this student loan debt. And even if President Biden forgives it, it doesn't restore the time spent earning that degree. And what happened is, desperate, I went into this welfare to work program, and I completed two different trainings, one in customer service, one in logistics. But because the employers are still private, they haven't been nationalized, not at this point, they still choose where to grant interviews and where to grant job offers. So all that training that they have in those programs, whether it's the higher education or whether it's the welfare to work, the choke point for a lot of people is still with the private employers. So the government would almost have to nationalize the private employers in order to achieve their goals. That's just my observation, Mr. House.
I think you're 100% on. I think you're 100% on. And watch as the companies that take on the work, welfare to work people, or the people that have gone through the government training, those corporations that take them on, like a diversity program, like you are some kind of minority, you know, qualification, you'll get. So instead of it being based on a quality of you have to have so many women, so many people of different nationalities, you have to have so many people who have gone through this government training program like you're describing. And when you do that, you'll get all kinds of government tax breaks and benefits, which helps to go along the idea of nationalizing the workforce. Because again, fascism is about privately owned, government controlled. Fascism is about privately owned, but government controlled. So this would be a way for them to control the workforce and give the workforce, the owner, should say, the owner of the company, the reward of following the rules of the government by hiring the people they want to a certain degree with all kinds of benefits, taxation, offsetting carbon footprint, whatever. Very good point. So I think what you're showing is the puzzle pieces are there. We just have to get more control of business. They don't have to own it. They don't have to nationalize it if they can control it. They will nationalize some stuff. They just need to get where they can control more. Great call, Joe. Jeff from Appleton, thanks for calling in. Hi, Jeff.
I would think I could get one of those. It's on the side.
Okay, I think he's ordering a meal. Let's go to line three. Jason. Jason from Minnesota. Thanks for calling in line three, Jason.
Hi, I just tuned in a few minutes ago. I caught your monologue on workers versus management. I'll give you my perspective. I've been a company truck driver all my life. I've never owned my own truck. I've never owned my own business. I've never wanted to because I don't want the pressures that comes with being an owner or a manager. When I shut the key off and go home, I'm done thinking about the business until I have to go back to work on Monday. Most of blue-collar workers, those that are guilty of this class envy that you talk about, do not realize what owners and managers have to carry on their shoulders 24/7. And they don't want that. The blue-collar guy doesn't want that. He wants to punch in, punch out. But he's still envious of the guy that's thinking about and managing his business 24/7, you know.
I agree with you, and there are many days
I couldn't agree more.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that, Jason. There are many days, even in the last few weeks, I have pointed to a couple people when my wife and I were out, and I pointed to that guy, and I said, look how happy he is in his work. Look how happy that guy is in his work. This is a big box store, hardware store, big. You guys all know the brand. I said, look how happy he is in his work. And when he's done out of here, he's done. I said, there is something to be envious about him because he walks out of here, he's done with this job. And I was referring to the fact that, like you're just saying, when you run something, it's on you 24/7. Let's see if we can get Jeff back in here, line two. Jeff, you go real quick. We'll get you back in, Jeff.
No,
nope, he's not there.
I dropped him.
All right. Well, thank you guys for the call. Jeff was going to say that we're spot on. So obviously this is resonating with a lot of you. But again, how many young people are taught what Jason just called in and said? How many of them are given the context to understand what we're talking about? No, because that would stop the envy they're trying to create. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on BCY America.